us for executive session?
No, I can regret that.
Okay, let's move out of executive session then. And, let's see, should I have made the motion?
4 hours. Yeah, so we won't need to do anything now.
Okay, so why don't we go to, we're back in regular session, and let's go to report our loss control committee. Got it.
I don't see Keith.
Keith's not, he skipped out.
We missed him. But the first thing we talked about was the Look For Safety League contest that just finished up. And all of you should have gotten emails, or no, you didn't get emails with the final results because I have them here. But for the small districts, for those of you that are a small district, you should have a paper that shows that Tintic won in a dogfight over Daggett. And again, just to explain what the Look For Safety League contest was, it's where you guys chose three schools from your district to represent you in a contest against other districts of similar size to see who could improve the most from about last year to this year. So it was all about improvement and then comparing that against the districts that are similar size. So Tintic won on that one against Daggett, and Beaver was a close third. In the medium-sized districts, Sevier took care of business over South Sandpete and North Sandpete. They won that one. And then in the large, Provo edged out Logan in a dogfight with Wasatch close behind.
We're getting bigger dogs next year.
Well, you know, a lot of room for improvement
this year. All management, Stephanie. You guys are right. Okay, so anyway, is there any feedback on the Look For Safety League contest? Did anybody even pay attention to it? Did they enjoy it? Give me some feedback.
I didn't hear a whole lot from my schools that were participating. You know, when you send out the emails letting us know where the standings were, I'd always make sure that I emailed them and said, hey, you guys are doing good, you're in second place, or whatever. And a couple of them would come back and say, well, you know, we'll win this, we'll get it done. But I don't know from out of the school's perspective, and you probably were out in the school more than I was talking about this when you went out and rolled it out. So I'd have to talk to the principal to see how it went.
Well, every month I emailed you guys and then the principals too and asked them to post it out next to the posters in all the faculty lounges and wherever they had them, just to keep the interest high and let them see where they stood. And you know, it's just one of those incentive things that you think, okay, we can have these guys attack some of our higher offenders and see if this little incentive program will generate some interest.
The one principal is pretty upset.
That's pretty bad, huh?
I don't think she's a BYU fan either. So.
Okay, I'm not either.
All right, so that was Look For Safety League. The next one was EMOD Hot Rod, and all of you have the report for that, and that's for the. This is completed July through June of this year that just completed versus the same period of 13 and 14. And looking at what dropped off in 13, 14 and what came on in 16, 17. So you can look out to your totals column that are just under July and June. And if you're in green, that means that you decreased. And that's good. If you're in red, it means you increased. And so our committee looked at all the districts in the colors, and some of them that were talked about as finalists. Daggett, in a small district, you have to give Daggett credit because going down two accidents and over $500 for districts that don't have many accidents, that's pretty good. One of the things that you'll notice is Nebo dropped about $500,000, and that's where the Flesh Eater fell off. Paiute, again, a small district that had drops in both cases, that was very good. San Juan had the carbon monoxide poisoning, fell off. South Summit had a good year, dropping 14 accidents and over $16,000. And Tooele had another good year. The whole thing was with this EMOD was to get the EMODs down to one or below. That's a target. And Tooele has been working really hard and seeing a steady decline in their EMOD. And again, they had another drop in accidents and dollars this year. So they should be approaching the one here pretty quick. And then Wasatch dropped 17 accidents and about 180 grand. And of course, you can see that they have, for the last few years, had a higher EMOD, but that EMOD is going to drop. Based on the numbers you're seeing there, that EMOD will drop. And the committee talked about it, and the trophy is going to go home this year with one of those districts that we just discussed, and it is Wasatch.
Oh.
Now that's a golf trophy.
So we want to congratulate Keith and the district for the things and steps they've been taking to address that. Next thing I want to talk about is, as you know, a lot of you guys are taking advantage of the Safe Schools program, and there's a correlation between schools who take a lot of Safe Schools classes and EMOD. I had talked to Mike Lee about an instance they had down there in Washington where the Safe Schools training actually provided a benefit for them, and I wanted him to talk about something that happened down there and how that helped them out.
Sure. Well, yeah, I don't know what Brent Phillips did to offend every governmental agency that performs audits, but last year we were audited by about every agency.
Some of them existed.
Yeah, some of them existed. One of them was the Office of Civil Rights that came down and did a fairly comprehensive audit of our school district, and they began on a line of questioning about discrimination training, what we were doing in terms of discrimination training in our school district, and once we said that not only do we do it, but we've got it tracked to a Safe Schools program, that line of questioning dried up really quick. We've seen that actually with other entities as well. One of the great benefits of the Safe Schools program isn't just the training, but the fact that we've got it tracked and documented, and we can show and demonstrate that this is something we assign to our personnel and something that we follow up on. We've endeavored to create a program wherein the courses that we're assigning each year are being linked to state and federal policies so that we're not arbitrarily picking these courses, but we're picking ones that we're required to do. And that really worked out for us with this Office of Civil Rights audit.
Thank you, Matt. So one of the things that we do is every year, during the year, especially at the end of the year, Bobby generates some reports that shows final numbers for you guys and how many accidents, what was the claim dollars, who's having them. You can track a lot of things through these reports. And it's very beneficial to have these numbers. And she provided a report to Aon, and Carrie and her people put together the report that you see in front of you right now that has tracked a four-year period, I believe, that was from 98 to 2001.
Words right behind you if you want.
And then also from 2011 to 14. And it tracks a lot of different things. And you can see some charts and graphs there that shows us the kind of accidents we're having, the lifting, the slips and falls, the things that's popping up that we've talked about previously as being a problem is the special needs classroom, people who work in there. There's just so many struck by students and bitten by students that involve the special needs kids. And so you're looking back at 98 to 2001, there's lots of things that we noticed. We noticed that the cost of medical has gone up dramatically. But, you know, we're going to dig in deeper to these numbers and create a little bit better report. Carrie, you want to jump in?
Yeah, just to kind of help you compare. So we wanted to look at,
know, the historical, obviously. So that's why we jumped back to 98. We didn't really go right to when the pool, we incepted in 95, correct? So we kind of want to get a few years of development. And then the reason we didn't go to 2016-17 claims is because they're still being paid, and so we kind of want to go back a few years to where most of these claims are being paid and settled. And, you know, we still have reserves in those dollar figures, but not as high as they would be if they were, you know, current or a year old. So, you know, we just thought it was interesting how things have kind of shifted over the years. You know, all things being equal, you have schools, you're growing. You know, we know there's more teachers, more schools, more incidents. Although, you know, what I think is good is that your frequency issue for having that many more employees is really not, it's not terrible, it's not great. But, you know, if we're comparing to 10, 15 years ago, $3 million in incurred costs versus today, $7.5 million, it's pretty significant. So just a couple, you know, things to kind of compare. And Jimmy thought that it would be best viewed by to look at the accident detail, but then also a lot of you like job title, because I know you're watching your districts, and you can kind of see the percent. So job title is going to be on 8 and 14, like page numbers. This is part of a big extensive report, so we've just kind of pulled out some pages to bring to your attention. So if you look at 8, which is the 1998 period, and then the 2011-14 period on page 14, you can kind of see the shift. Teachers are our most severe right now. 8s, 21%, where teachers, you know, they were 25% back 10, 13 years ago. So, you know, there's some interesting shifts in here that I just thought it would be really helpful for you to kind of understand as you're kind of working with your programs and your principals and with the districts. Like I said, Jimmy and I will continue to work on some things and bring back to the board. But this is just kind of the discovery period right now. We're really just diving into what's out there and what can we do to improve. And then, obviously, the accident detail is going to give you some of the same information. I know this is all broken up in percents and dollar figures, so there's a lot going on here. But I think it's a really good detailed sheet, you know, to see the group. Now, one thing I did want to note on page 10, which is the accident detail page for the current year. As time's gone on, it would appear there is a lot of claims being reported with unknown exposure. So that's really hard for us to drill down on you know, what categories this should really be in. So that's where we really stress that reporting can be very, very important for Jimmy's efforts and you know, anything you take back to your districts. So we can't stress enough how important those reporting, claims reporting reports are to us in doing the analysis. And, you know, I think it'd be great. I know Jimmy's worked hard and USBA's worked really hard to put together a manual, and you have some processes in place, and, you know, maybe we can help with some training or something to kind of help, you know, improve things like that. But we know that, you know, we'd like to identify what that unknown exposure is, and that's why it's kind of highlighted in red there. And then just to, on page 17, this is where I think is really useful for you. And this is kind of comparing, this is a school's peer group, and this is comprised of all of the standard data, excuse me, between, and this is all Aon clients and other clients. It's not just specific to our clients, but this is a school district peer group. And how this is represented is anything in the red is indicating that you're much higher than the industry practice. Anything yellow means you're kind of right there. You're kind of close to that industry practice. And then green is going to be that you're actually better or below industry practice. So ultimately, we want to see this whole sheet in green.
Why do you think par were so much higher?
Well,
that's a large difference.
There's some pretty big differences. So if you look at the ergo claim frequency, you know, the industry practice 23% or less, and in 1998 we were 44%, and now we're 47%. So we haven't really improved. You know, we're kind of going on an upward trend. The claim severity is probably the most concerning, and that is, you know, 47% even back 13 years ago, and we're skyrocketing again in the newer years. So industry practice really is that 30%, and with a high end, it's 36%. So 30 is kind of the mid-range, but 36 is kind of the high. So I think there's some real room for improvement on ergonomic claims activity. Yes?
Let me ask how much of that is connected to office work, you know, wrist and typing and so forth?
It is. It's all connected. Anything ergo claim. And, you know, so that's why reporting is so critical, because it helps Bobby code those in her loss reports. And that can help us identify those ergo claims. So, yes, those ergos are, you know, your wrists, your backs. Yeah. And then you have slip, trips, and falls, which actually, you know, that's not trending too bad. I mean, you're kind of right in the average with everybody else. So not too bad there. That's the frequency. But then look what happens to us on severity. We're kind of okay. We're right there with the industry. So 38 is better than the industry practice. So slip and falls, you know, we would appear to not be too bad. Especially where, you know, we do have a lot of snow here. So we do have slip and falls. But.
So if I understand this correctly, the first number for both of these is the frequency count. So if our frequency actually, if the number of claims as a percentage of the whole dropped on one, it would actually make the percentage of the other go up, right?
On frequency? So,
yeah.
So you're on...
It's the percentage of our total claims. So
right.
Basically, to get both of these numbers down, they have to be less in percent of frequency compared to other claims.
That means
something else is going to be a higher percentage in total.
That's true.
Yeah.
So if we, does that make sense? So basically, when I look down here and I go 40, when it says percent of total incurred costs went from 47% to 38%, that's automatically going to drive up the percentage of total cost that's under the ergonomic claims. Because they're going to be a larger percentage of the total cost, because this one's a smaller percentage of the total cost, even if it was just the same.
If it was priced on total, so percent of total incurred costs. I'd have to work with you on that.
Okay, yeah.
I didn't do this report, so that's probably why I can't answer all these questions.
Okay. But you're comparing against industry, but reduce that a little bit. You're not just looking at just a trend.
Correct. I'm just saying that part of the reason one of them might have gone up is because the other one went down.
Down. Because on incurred costs? Meaning our frequency goes down and our severity comes up.
So total incurred costs dropped 9% on the one, and on the other, it went up by 11%. Well, part of the reason that went up by 11% is because the other one went down. Or it could be that the reason that this one went down is because the other one actually went up.
He's talking cost.
Severity.
If it's a percentage of your total costs, if one goes down as a percentage, the other has to go up as a percentage, and so.
Yeah, but your frequency percentage is claim counts.
Correct.
Right.
Yeah.
And then your total incurred costs.
But it's claim counts as a percentage of the whole.
Percentage of Of your whole totals, yes.
Correct.
Empties are the only two categories. Are there other categories?
There are other categories.
They don't add up to 100. So
right. Yeah,
that's
there
what
are.
I'm saying. So as one goes up, the other one
yeah.
goes down.
Yeah,
so
because
they'll always equal 100.
Yeah. Yes, right.
But isn't the important thing is how we compare them to the industry?
I think what this is illustrating, Brent, is to try to, you know, we're giving you an industry average of where we really, ideally, you want to see your claims based on your peers. And that, I think that's kind of the point of this.
So I guess there's some other categories that are not on here.
Absolutely.
That we're crushing industry
absolutely.
Average.
Absolutely.
We must be far better than industry average.
Well, I don't know if you're crushing.
Well, we would have to be.
We just took your highest. That's a good point. We'll do one on all of these, and you can see where you're at. But regardless of where you may be crushing it, this is where you could improve.
I'm just trying to understand.
Right? And I don't know that we're crushing really anywhere, to be honest. I'll do further. You know, we can break this down. We're trying to identify and really scope out where the problem areas are. So
my question is probably a little more elementary. The ergonomic claims. My question would be is, what job title is driving those? Because to me, that would be the.
It's got to be lifting and teaching.
It's going to be your lifting.
It's food service folks.
It's not your slip and falls. It's going to be your lifting.
So that to me, that would be
your back injuries.
Because then it's like, okay.
That'd be helpful.
To understand.
Who are the people that are not what I need to help in terms of
being a food service worker that has carpal tunnel now?
But most of them are told if you look at the cop loss figures and all that lifting,
No, Derek, those are good questions. And actually, we have about a 20-page report that kind of involves all that. I didn't want to go into that whole thing right now, but we will. And those are all great questions, and it's helpful for us to kind of understand, what we're looking for. So these are just some high points that I kind of want to share, and then we'll build on this for sure, and we'll kind of identify where those. But again. We have like $344,000 of claims of unknown exposure that we could have ergo claims in there. We can't really identify it completely by the description. I mean, Bobby gets a description of loss, but sometimes they're really tough to break into that code. So, and Bobby, I don't know if you have any comments on that. We can get those claims in. I know.
Well, we try to, we tweak them as they come in. And there are simply some categories that are you can't classify.
Exactly.
Those are not. They shouldn't be that many. That's the thing. So.
Well, you know what? Maybe we've got some. I mean, severity and cost. It could just be some that are just expensive.
Yeah.
And we just don't know how to.
And then your severity again, it coincides with your increase in your medical costs year after year after year, and so. I mean,
98, 14, your cost of medical
claim. Oh, yeah, it's gone way up.
The same kind of injury is four times more now than it used to be.
Exactly. We've been talking about that for years. So I think you all know, a back injury used to be a $25,000 claim. It's no longer. We're lucky if we get out of it for $75,000. So, we know those escalations, inflations, we're always on top of that. But that's where this industry practice benchmarking really puts it into perspective, because that's all hitting everybody else too. So, these are just some things, like I said, I'm bringing to your attention, and Jimmy and I have a lot of work to do, and we're gonna really dive down and try to do some work on this. So.
Carrie, what does the SA mean?
Questions?
SA stationary object. What's the SA?
Struck against. Yeah. STF is slip, trip, and fall. I know we got a lot of abbreviations in there.
Struck by.
And then SB, be struck by.
And then struck by,
Thank you, Carrie. I appreciate all the work that Carrie and they on those for us. And again, we'll dive deeper into those numbers and more specifics. Thank you. Help you going forward. SA schools training for every employee in the district. And that's one of the things they shared with the civil rights person, that everybody, superintendent down to whoever. And, you know, it's indicative, I think, part of that is indicative of the 0.78 EMOD that they have. It's a big district with a small district EMOD, and that's commendable. So, Bobby always likes it when I talk about the company nurse reports. I pull out some during the year and highlight a few of them. So I've got just a few here. This one is a lady that was eating slices of oranges, a lunchroom lady eating slices of oranges, and actually the teacher pulled out one of the slices, the peel of it, and noticed that there was blood all over it, and looked at the others that she had eaten, and they were all covered with blood, and she had just eaten them all.
Blood orange.
So somebody that was slicing those oranges got a piece of their finger and left it on her arm. And this is an aerospace science instructor in the Washington School District. They have a lot of those down there. They were doing trust fall exercises from a 5-foot-high beam. And yeah, there wasn't much trust going on there because his team did let him slip right through and landed on his neck and head.
No, there was plenty of trust, just not follow through.
Yes.
The trust was
denied. In fairness to the students, they didn't catch his feet. They just didn't get his head.
Then we have a 63-year-old teacher playing baseball against the students. And you know those ultra-competitive people that they are just so competitive that reason and smart thinking goes out the window. Close play at the plate, he head first dives into home plate and destroys his shoulder. 63 years old. Then we've got one, special needs. Kid put his hand down his pants, comes out with two hands full of feces, going straight for his mouth. The teacher grabs the hands and he bites her hands, and she gets all messed up with her hands. This one was trimming the hedges with the hedgers. He put his safety glasses down just for a second, and the stick broke off and hit him in the eye.
What are the chances, right?
Yeah, for a second.
One more special needs one. The teacher versus student softball game, fields the ball cleanly, goes to throw to first base, and blows her knee out during the full course of the throw. Meniscus and all kinds of tendon ligaments. There you go.
Thanks, Jimmy. Carrie, did you have anything else?
No. Oh, yes. Thank you, Richard. I did forget about one thing I was just going to mention. You know, every February we get around the table and talk about increased or what we anticipate the payrolls to increase. And it's usually, you know, in that 0 to 0.5% to maybe 1 or 2% on a year where we've had good funding. Well, you know, we got through this year and we decided on that 1% increase, and we're always slightly behind a little bit. But I was pretty surprised. I mean, obviously we've got through legislature and a very successful year. And I started getting payrolls from some of the larger districts that are not part of this pool. But obviously, and Park City's been all over the news, so we know that, you know, you're getting some 10 to 15% increases in payrolls. And, you know, I really wondered at first how that was going to apply. So that's a big, big jump. So I'm just kind of giving you a little heads up that, you know, when we start estimating those payrolls next year, we're probably not looking at 1%. Although I know it sounds like some districts maybe are not. You know, you won't see that large of increase. But we need to kind of all be thinking about how we can address the really big increase in payroll. And, you know, unfortunately, I mean, you know, you all know it's cost of do, doing business. When your payrolls go up, your risk is up, your payout's going to be higher. So, you know, I think we all understand that. But it's just going to be a really different discussion next February. So I don't know if there's any comment or...
What's that?
Bring your checkbooks in, is what you're telling us.
Well, I don't know. I think, actually, there are some ways... I mean, we can't do anything about payrolls. It's just the main driver of workers' comp and the rates. It doesn't mean we won't have better than normal loss cost rates, which have been driving downward, and that's a really good sign. We had really good decreases this year. And, you know, there's some funding. The good thing is that you guys have been building this capital for all these years. So that we may have some things we can do, but it's just going to be a big difference, something we haven't faced in the 20 years of the pool. So I'm just kind of bringing that to your attention now, and we'll bring this whole topic up again in February, you know, next year.
I kind of jokingly talked about Jordan right after that meeting, you know, or a month or two after. Jordan says 10%. Everybody in Salt Lake matches it, you know, and those of us who are competing for the same teachers, there's no choice but to
bump it up.
Jack it up. I mean, we can't compete with Park City, but they're right next door. So,
you know, one of the challenges is next year, when Paul gathers all the payroll data, it's going to be for the 16-17 funding, right? Which is still lower.
So what typically happens when that's gathered, so say Park City gives it 10%, it really isn't a true 10% because we always say, oh, everybody's going to give it 3, but it comes back in and it might be less than that because you have attrition. You have a lot of districts might give a pretty decent raise, but they cover some of that with not hiring other employees. So even though on the surface right now it looks big, I don't think it's going to come in that everybody's going to have a 10 to 12% increase payroll.
Yeah, we hope not.
But we'll be able to see because we're comparing straight apples to apples with, as long as everybody reports on the AFR like they have been.
Yeah.
Do we have a choice on that, Paul? Is there another way not to do that?
Yes, we gave for the last year an early termination benefit. Basically, the board said we're not sure if we'll ever bring this back because we have a teacher shortage, why we're paying you to lose. So we lost 2x teachers in 1 year. So our attrition was through the roof this year, which allows you to get a little bit more on base. But there's a whole bunch of things. The payroll's not going to jump.
Yeah.
We're actually paying the teachers less.
You know what, though? I guess why I was concerned and why I came to Richard with this is because in getting the large districts, I thought the same thing. I thought this isn't going to be. When I heard that they were 10, 15%, I thought, well, that's not really what it's going to be, you know, I figured. But then when I got the actual payrolls for the Alpines, Granites, and the larger ones, they were 11 to 15%.
Well, we have attrition every year, so if we're doing 4% with attrition or 10% with attrition, there's still a mean increase there.
Yeah.
To me, even with attrition and all that, you're still going to see some kind of bigger increase.
Yeah. So, I mean, I'm not expecting you to all come here.
What payrolls we have gotten yet?
Yeah.
It's what, 12th of July. Those new salaries wouldn't have kicked in until the first
year. Yeah, because with those larger districts, we're dealing with more current year budgets, where the pool were kind of a year behind. So that's why they are currently paying their workers' comp based on current budget and payrolls for the 2017 to 18.
So
it's a little different than what we do with the pool. So you guys are just a little behind, and we do catch you up. I mean, it all catches up, and it all, you know, because you're all reporting. So where are you going to see this big jump? It's really a year from now, right?
Well,
so you just thought we better start talking about it now.
For our district, that's not totally true, because during the recession or turndown or whatever we're titling it, we didn't hire the teachers. If somebody retired, we didn't replace them. We increased class sizes. So the last 2 years,
we've started to really try and beef that up and beef up our teacher count again and get to the point where we are able to have small class sizes. So even in a small district like us, in the last 2 years, we've hired 15 new teachers, 15 new positions. And so that's going to bump it up. Maybe our custodians. We really should have had a new custodian because our enrollment is higher, but we made them, you know, do. But now we've added a custodian. So inversion, so my payroll jumps up because more because of that than because of the raise we get.
Yeah, okay. Yeah,
so
good point.
You can see that, especially in some of these smaller school districts who probably did similar things.
Wasatch, you guys are building two new schools this year, so. You know, that's going to hit you pretty huge.
I think what you're seeing with some of those also on the Wasatch Front, some of them really did increase their salary
schedules.
But some of them, what you're seeing, like the Alpine and Jordan did theirs a little bit, but it's all the new students that they got. It's just new growth. Yeah. And Alpine's is almost all new growth they're dealing with.
They're growing schools.
Yeah, they
similar
didn't jack,
to,
Alpine didn't really jack their salary schedule up.
No, they didn't.
They did not. Theirs is new growth.
Yeah.
So they have to hire more personnel.
Yeah.
And that's what's jumping the payroll up.
Well, I've had their payroll history for the last, probably 4 or 5. It's never been that high. It's never been 15%.
But
I don't know if we're getting.
But I know their negotiations, they didn't agree to
raise. Yeah, they didn't agree to raise. So, see, that's interesting because if they're not, we're still getting that 10 and 15%.
Yeah, but
it's bodies.
Yeah.
So new bodies means more claims, means more payouts. So however, whatever's causing that payroll, we have to report and account for it.
Yeah, so like last year we grew 4.7%. And this year we're projecting for next year 4.3% just in growth alone. So having a lot of the growth, that can push it things a lot.
Yeah, and that's going to catch up. I mean, it will catch up.
It does.
Right?
It'll catch up. That's why we get
So anyway, Richard, do we have anything else to bring up about
that?
Yeah.
I think we'll have more conversation about it.
Yeah.
Okay, thank you. Appreciate it. I would like to give Richard some time to address a couple of issues.
Okay. Bobby, would you like a minute?
Well, I have to look at Kent because when we first got into our claims committee, it's really great. It really is. It's great. But when we got into our claims committee, my gosh, Richard, I'm...
You're okay.
There's no crying
workers. I know. I know. We're supposed to be really hard, right? But anyway, I don't know. I guess because I think the world of all of you. And I've worked with you for 33 years. And you developed a friendship and a relationship that is unique. And I thank you for that. You've always been very supportive of me and USBA. And, of course, I couldn't have done this without Richard. But we sat in before claims committee started and kind of chit-chatted back and forth. And Kent mentioned, he keeps getting asked, well, when are you going to retire? When are you going to retire? And I'm sitting here going, oh. But anyway, so the news is really, it is good news, and I'm excited about it, but I've made a decision to retire. And so we'll be looking for a replacement. But I do really sincerely want to let all of you know, it's been great. We've seen some really good people go, and we've had some really great ones, new ones come in, and it's been fun getting to know everyone, and you'll be taken care of for sure, and you'll probably see bigger and better things coming down the road, but I did want to let you know this. I'm not leaving tomorrow. I'll be around at least until the end of the year, so
make sure that you're all taken care of as you should be. And again, just want to know, let you know how much I really appreciate the friendships that we have developed over the years. And even though some are short, Heather, I haven't got to know you too long, but it's been great. And Jenny, a few more months, and then you have to be in your hands. So anyway, so I just wanted to let everybody know that. Okay.
This is one of those difficult times that you know it was going to happen at some point. That's why we all work, isn't it? Is to get to that point. And then once you get there, why, it's one of those situations when Bobby approached me last January and said, you know, I'm ready to retire. And I said, no, you need to stay until March. And so then I finally talked her into staying until July. And then I talked her into staying until the end of December. But it certainly will be a huge loss for us, and all of you know that this just creates a tremendous loss for us as an organization, because there's so much that revolves around what Bobby does, and I think you probably have some appreciation for that. But there is so much that happens there, and you know, all of that dates back to 1984, when this program was first put together, and Bobby came on board, and she's the one who started it back then, in 84. So it goes that long, and so her involvement with it, and certainly her fingerprints have been all over everything that has happened with it. And I tell you, I think that everything that she has done has been just absolutely phenomenal to get us to the point where we're at today. All of the decisions that were made and the programs that were put into place, and all of you been a part of that too, of making that all happen. Back to the time when Paul was the very first president of this organization, when we started, and making that happen. And that wasn't easy. I'll tell you what, that was
a long time ago.
Yes, it was.
Me and Cam were just babies.
Yeah, well, but we do remember that and appreciate it. And so it is going to create a tremendous task for us to find somebody that can come in as the claims manager. And so the idea that I would suggest of what we would do, and what I've had in mind that we would do, is and I think some people say, well, is there somebody on staff now that you could move into that position? As you know, I'm a big advocate of that. If there's somebody that can do the job that works in your district now, I'm an advocate of moving that person in. I believe that from Jim Collins, that's the author of Good to Great. I take that from him, and I think it's a great idea. Do we have somebody that can do that? I don't think that we do. Now, do we have some great claims adjusters? Man, I'll say we do. We have some fantastic people and have a lot of years of being claims adjusters and can do that, and they do it exceptionally well. Now, could they move in to be the claims adjuster? It's a little bit kind of a different move, because as you can see and have seen, you know, that person, we expect him to come here and do what Bobby's done today, make a report of all of the claims and bring that information together. A lot of it is data that Jimmy talked about, of putting the data and those numbers together, and Bobby does that side of it as well. And so this position, in my mind, is about, you know, I'm thinking now is probably about 60% is doing data kinds of things, doing the kinds of things that you guys do. That's what Bobby does for us, a lot of that kind of stuff. So it's about 60% of her time is doing that, and managing people and assigning claims and those sorts of things, and working with, you know, all kinds of outside vendors that we have. Everything from bill review to company nurse to, you know, actuaries to auditors, doing all those kinds of things. And then there's probably about 40% or so, in my mind anyhow, it might be off a bit, but of doing actual claims adjusting and spending your time on there. And it might not even be quite that much, Bobby. It may be, you know, you probably speak to it more than that. But
well, I don't do as much adjusting anymore, but I'm adjusting every day because I'm looking at everybody else's claims and adjusting, so.
And being able to know that side of the, yeah, of the picture. So anyhow, so do we have somebody inside that could do that? I don't know. And so I think the thing we need to do is we need to open it up and advertise for the position. And then if some of those people feel like that they're qualified, we'll certainly encourage them to do that, to apply. But there, we don't have any of those people that have had any of the 60% kind of experience. That's really been, and the way we've done that is Bobby's done that thing, and then our adjusters, they do adjusting. And that's what their responsibilities have been. So anyhow, I think that's what we need to do is to open it up and advertise. I think, you know, it's going to take at least 30 days of advertising. My thought is that we probably ought to have it open up for a month and a half to be able to reach out and to get it to those people that may be interested and people that have had that kind of experience. And I think the next thing to me that's the most important, and that is to find somebody that that you all feel comfortable with, just like you've done with Bobby. You know, she is just a master at that, of being able to work with people and all of you, and you know, and do it in a very technical way, but yet in a way that maybe just more in a professional way of how she does it. So for us to find somebody that can handle all of that, actually to me is the most important thing, is finding that person that can work with all of you and you feel comfortable with, then I think that we can. Now, how have we done this before? Typically when we've had somebody that's been at the manager level, like what Bobby is and what we had with Jimmy at the time, of being replacing somebody as a loss control manager, so those two people at that level, then Kent Peterson was actually the president of the pool at the time that we hired Jimmy. And I think we had a great process. It was Kent's idea. And is what we did is that we had this committee, and there was Kent and I think two others, Kent, if I remember right. So there's you and myself. So we had four people then that was the committee that actually interviewed people. And I don't remember if I narrowed them down or...
We narrowed them down to, like, the final ones we interviewed.
And then we interviewed, like, three people, I believe, for the position. That worked well for us, and so I would suggest we probably do the same thing, that Carrie would be there on that committee, and two other members of the board here would be on there, and myself, and then I would suggest we would add Bobby to that committee, so it would be a five-member committee then that would go through and would do the search, so that would be who the committee would be. I think it would be very helpful. Of having her on there. I think that would just be absolutely, you know, crazy not to put her there. When we've got her there, let's use her. And so I would say that would be the committee. And again, so let me back up. So I think if we advertised for about 45 days and then we looked at the candidates through that committee, then brought back a recommendation in October for our meeting, of who that we would hire, and then that we have that person on board about the 1st of November and have them work with Bobby at least through November and December, so that'd be 2 months. And then, you know, the thought just crossed my mind, maybe the thing we ought to do would be, maybe we ought to have Bobby work with them through next July.
Yes.
And then we know these people are trained and they can take over. So I think that's a good plan.
Yeah.
Let's go.
I move.
So the Christmas party this year is going to be
big.
Yeah. We're going to have a big party. Yes, we are. And that's just what that will be.
Mardi Gras.
Now, wait a minute, Richard. I want you to tell the board what my request was.
To have a big party of
actually, this year we're going to get real assault rifles.
By the way, Lark, my husband is love that.
I think it would be really valuable to have that new person work with Bobby for those 2 months. And if we could bring him on a little earlier for, you know, just some way that it worked out, we could bring him on a little earlier, I think that would even be more helpful. But there's kind of this cycle we go through, you know, of all of our monthly reports and some of those filing kinds of things and getting ready for board meeting. I think it would be really helpful for this person to go through that as much as they possibly could before they start on their own, and then they would begin on January 1st would be the start date for that person. So that's what I see. So
I think if you were wanting to start in November, you got to make sure that whole process of making the recommendation is done so that it can be brought to this board and approved, and they have time to get out of the current job they're in. They need a 2 or 3 week notice
for that
to their current employer, so you want to judge that out so that works to get you the first of November.
Yeah, and we're thinking, you know, if I had the board meeting, we had the board meeting in the first part of October, then I think that would all work there, Kent. So, like, if, you know, if we had that meeting that first week of October the 6th, maybe that Friday, then that would give us, you know, about the 3 weeks notice that person could give then to their current employer.
Richard had mentioned when we were talking about this a little bit earlier that, I mean, this might be an excellent job that a VA would like to apply for.
None of us could do what Bobby.
No, I know, but yeah.
You know, and I think that's why I'm an advocate of us opening that up. I think, you know, we may have some of you that may have some interest in workers' comp kind of work. And again, I think I've tried to lay that out and say, you know, this is what I see that it is. There's about 60% of that job is what you guys do right now, and the other 40% of it is pretty technical workers' comp stuff. So it's got to be, you know, that thing of having some experience with, and you guys have had a lot of experience with workers' comp, I know that. But anyhow, that's what I think that we do, and then it's like anything, when we do a superintendent search, you know, I think we open it up, and let's see who applies, and then we'll go from there.
October 6th.
October 6th, then.
It's what we're proposing. How does that sound? October 6th for our next meeting? I think that's a Friday.
Is there anyone that doesn't work for, or see any issue there?
It's kind of what there's really no objection. Maybe that's what we'll plan for then, October 6th. Is there anything else that we need to talk about? Can we get a motion to adjourn then? Mark, second. Do we have a second?
Nobody wants to adjourn today.
Okay, we'll adjourn. Thanks, everybody, for coming.
Make sure you don't allow Mike to give a speech at her farewell. When he did the train, he actually went to the conference for the, it's called Safe Schools Training, and he was on a panel that addressed the entire session, or the first one of their open sessions. Their committee meetings, and he was asked what they were doing when they were losing knowledge base with all the
What did he say?
Yeah, he said,